This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, what vintage cookbooks can tell us about Cincinnati's past. But first, when she was 38 years old, Jennifer Tiga found out something about her family's past that would alter her life forever. The adopted German-Nigerian woman made a shocking discovery from a book she found at a library. Her grandfather, Amon Gert, was a brutal Nazi war criminal. Gert was the commandant of the Plaszow concentration camp in Poland and was known as the Butcher of Plaszow. She realized he would have killed her if he had met her. The discovery set her on a mission to comprehend her family history. She then wrote a book of her own, My Grandfather Would Have Shot Me, A Black Woman Discovers Her Family's Nazi Past. Jennifer Tiga joins us, along with the Center for Holocaust and Humanity Education Executive Director Sarah Weiss and Mayerson JCC of Cincinnati Cultural Arts Manager Betsy Singer-Lefton. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jennifer, Betsy, and Sarah, thank you for joining us today.
Mark, happy to be here. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Jennifer, tell me about that day you discovered the book about your family's history.
It was a day that is now, it was 8 years ago exactly. It was an ordinary day, and you could say it divided my life into a before and an after. It was a day in Hamburg, in Germany, where I live. It's my hometown, in a library. And it's a big library, not a small library, a huge library with thousands of books. And I was in the psychology department, not in the history department, what one might assume. And I saw a book. It was a red book, and I only could read the spine. It was on the shelf. The spine said, I have to love my father, don't I? I could also read the author's name, but I didn't know the name, never heard about it. So I took the book from the shelf, and I started leafing through its pages. There was text, but there were also photographs, and there was one photograph of a woman. It was a woman with dark, long hair, and this picture reminded me of my biological mother. And there was another picture. It was a picture of an older woman, and this picture reminded me of my biological grandmother. So you have to know that I was adopted as a child. And when I continued, at the end of the book, there was a summarization of biographical details. And these details perfectly matched the information that I had surrounding my adoption paperwork. So at this very moment, I understood that the book that I was holding in my hand was not just any book or just a random book. No, it was a book that told the story of my biological family, of my biological mother, and therefore also of my biological grandfather.
And Jennifer, wasn't your mother, your biological mother, actually the author of the book?
No, she wasn't.
Okay.
The author was a journalist. It was a book about my mother. It was a family chronicle about the family. And the book was actually, my mother gave an interview to this journalist. And since this interview was so interesting, they decided to make a book out of it. This is why I didn't recognize the author's name.
What attracted you to this particular book? As you were saying, this is a section, a library that is full of thousands and thousands of books. What was it about this one particular book that grabbed your attention?
Well, that's a question that's difficult to answer, Mark, because it's actually the ultimate question whether this was coincident or whether it was fate. Maybe it was the color of the book. It was a red color, so maybe it was one of the reasons. But I think this was meant for me to find this book.
Jennifer, wasn't it within a few days or moments that you also saw the film Inheritance, close to discovering all of this?
Yeah. The day when I discovered the book was a day that, just to make this discovery, you can imagine, was a shock by itself. When I found the book, immediately in the library, I was so weak that I couldn't stand, so I left the library, and I walked outside. Outside the building, there are benches, and I lied down. I had to call my husband. My husband came. He picked me up. And when I was at home, I first started reading the book because I didn't know. I wasn't familiar with the content. And after I read the book, I did some research on the internet, and I found out that there was the very same day Just hours later, 12 hours later, actually, there was a movie, and the movie is called Inheritance. It's a movie that shows the encounter between my biological mother and Helen Rosenzweig. Helen Rosenzweig was the former maid in the household of Amon Göth while he was in Prussia. And this movie was shown on German television for the very first time just hours after I made the discovery.
Were you ever curious about your family history before this, or did you ever have any inkling of an idea that this could be part of your family history?
No, well, I was always interested because I wasn't adopted as a baby. I grew up in an orphanage. When I was 4 weeks old, my mother took me to a Catholic orphanage where I grew up for the first years of my life. I was later in a foster family, and the foster family adopted me when I was 7. So I was in contact with my biological, with the maternal side, with my mother and with my biological grandmother until the age of 7. Thereafter, ties were cut from my adoptive family side. So I was always interested, and it was not, you know, that I didn't have any kind of information. I knew more than other children who were adopted about my family's past, but I had no clue about the historical background. No one talked about it with me, and it wasn't known as well to my adoptive family or to the social institution that was involved into the adoption process.
You said that after you discovered this, you felt weak and you had to lie down. What were the long-term effects of discovering this, Jennifer? I mean, what did you feel? What did this do to your life?
Well, it changed my life, but now, since 8 years passed, and it was a long process that was not done within a short period of time, I could say that ultimately it changed my life for the good. Because when you grow up with a family secret, with a toxic family secret, which was in my case because these things were kept for me not because of positive feelings. No, it was kept because of guilt, it was kept because of shame, because of fear. And if you discover such a secret, it ultimately can set you free, because in my case, it made me understand what my real identity was about. And you need to have a feeling of true identity, I guess. I think this is not true only for me, but this is true for everyone. If you don't have a feeling of true identity, if you don't know who you are, it is very, very difficult to live a healthy life. So a lot of things happen, and we will have more time to discuss the different steps on the road to recovery. But ultimately, yes, I would say it was something that, if I look at it today, it was a gift that I found it out.
Tell us about your grandfather, Amon Göth. What did you discover about him?
Well, I did know Amon Göth, but as probably most of the listeners, I only knew him as a Hollywood movie character. I had seen the movie Schindler's List, but I never made the connection. I never ever assumed that he would be someone I was related to or like blood related to, part of my family, of my heritage. So I only had this movie character in front of me. But when I did my research, of course, I found out a lot of different facts that are not so known to people. For example, that he was not only the commandant of the concentration camp in Prussia. No, he was also responsible, for example, for the eviction of the Krakow ghetto. He was a war criminal. Mm-hmm. And he was not at the Nuremberg trial. He was extradited actually to Poland after the war. He was put on trial in Poland and finally hanged not far from the former concentration camp in 1946.
Sarah, can you give us some background about Plaszow,
sure.
What that concentration camp was like?
Sure. I don't know that I can give the context for what it was like, but it was on the outskirts of Krakow. It was initially set up in 1942 as a labor camp. So there was a variety of industrial aspects to Plaszow. It was men and women mostly working there. Later in 1944, it became a concentration camp. Many people were murdered there. At the height, it was about 20,000 people at the most. Just to give some context, there were more than really tens of thousands, more than 10,000 camps of various kinds, labor, concentration, death camps during the Holocaust. So Plaszów was one of many, many, many camps. Life, like in many other camps, was tough. There was limited food, limited hard work, slave labor. People were beaten on a regular basis and ultimately often deported to other killing centers and killing sites. And there was, while there wasn't, it wasn't a place like Auschwitz where there were gas chambers, there was killing going on in the camp as well. Perhaps not in the form of mass execution, but people were being murdered all throughout Plaszów as well.
Jennifer, did you ever visit Plaszów?
Yeah, I mean, Plaszów, the former concentration camp, is not existing anymore. Yeah. So if you go there, you won't
see it. It's a memorial now, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah, there's a memorial, which is actually a very weird place because it is where part of the concentration camp was. But today there's a big street. It's not really a highway, but a big street. And the memorial is placed on a little hill, and you have to walk up the stairs. I was there, and it was maybe 1.5 years after I made the discovery about the family's past. I went there because immediately when I found out, or when I discovered the book, and for the first month, I was very much struggling with the truth because everything came so suddenly, so out of the blue. So for me, it was difficult somehow to stay in reality. Everything that had happened for a long period ago, like the Second World War, the Holocaust, everything was so close to me. So it was difficult for me somehow to stay in reality. And when I came to Krakow and when I was at the memorial, I was actually surprised not to find the concentration camp, because for me this was time had stand still. And of course it wasn't the place. So when I was at the memorial, one of the reasons why I flew to Krakow was that I needed somehow, or I wanted to have a symbolic act for me to let the past go, or let's say integrate the past into my life. And I had to do it by somehow honoring the victims. I felt from inside that this would be a possibility for me somehow, you know, to let go part of it. And this is exactly what I did. I went to the memorial and I left flowers there. I was there sitting quietly by myself for some hours and mourning the victims. And I remember after a period where I was so troubled, it was the first time when I was on the flight back to Germany that I felt some kind of relief, and I felt, yeah, now I have done something that was really, really difficult but really important for me to do.
We will continue our conversation with Jennifer Tiga, Sarah Weiss, and Betsy Singer-Lefton. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking with Jennifer Tiga. Her book is My Grandfather Would Have Shot Me, A Black Woman Discovers Her Family's Nazi Past. We're also joined by the Center for Holocaust and Humanity Education Executive Director Sarah Weiss and Marison GCC of Cincinnati Cultural Arts Manager Betsy Singer-Lefton. And you can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Betsy, take a minute. Tell us about the event that Jennifer is going to be part of this week.
Yes, absolutely. We're so pleased. Ms. Tiga will be joining us at the Marison JCC tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. The Marison JCC in partnership with CHAG. lots of letters. So happy to have a forum for Ms. Tiga to tell this unbelievable story. And she will graciously be telling the story in a little more detail, answering some questions, and delightfully we'll be staying around a little bit afterwards to sign copies of her book, her memoir, which we will have on sale there at the JCC tomorrow. And again, the event begins at 7, and we welcome your listeners to go to our website at MayersonJCC.org to purchase tickets, which are I'm happy to say, are flying off the shelves. So.
Well, we've also got a link to that at WVXU.org as well, so you can find that website there as well. And Betsy, what's your perspective on this? So, lessons that we can learn from Jennifer's story.
Absolutely. I mean, stories of survival can take so many forms. I just find Ms. Tiga's resilience and the way she has coped and risen above a really devastating piece of information. And as she just was sharing with us, that she turned it into something positive. Interesting from a historical standpoint, but interesting from what we all are, the humanity and the people that we all are. And regardless of what our past or futures are, we all have a journey. And, you know, to hear the journey that, you know, Ms. Tiga has taken with her family is something we all can carry with us and learn from, I think.
Yeah.
Jennifer, when you found that book in the library in Hamburg, how did you know that what was in the book was true? How did you go about verifying that?
Well, I did, of course, have information because I grew up in Germany, and in Germany, education about the Holocaust is mandatory. So I did know a lot about the Holocaust, and I was also thinking some of the listeners probably will ask themselves, so why did it affect me so severely? But one of the reasons was I had even more information because I was living in Israel as a young girl when I was in my mid-20s for a couple of years. So the Holocaust was something I was very familiar with. I had lots of information, and therefore I needed to verify, which I did through the internet, but later on also I went to the archives. But I knew, you know, this was not something that was invented. I knew about the story already.
Have you ever...
of course, my personal story, but I knew about Plaszow, and I knew that, for example, the movie Schindler's List, I knew it was a Hollywood movie, but I knew that it was based on reality, and I knew that a lot of survivors said this was a very accurate movie.
Have you talked to other descendants of Nazi war criminals? Have you ever had a chance to have conversations with them and how they coped with that?
Absolutely, because, you know, when you grow up in Germany, this is part of our identity, of our German identity, and not in every German family, but in most of German families, they had perpetrators. If you refer more to the known families of Nazi perpetrators, I was approached by some, but I didn't feel the need to meet them in person. I did read their books. There's a lot of literature out because I was interested. I wanted to know how they cope with it and how their journey was. But somehow, I think one of the reasons why I never felt the urge to meet them in the end was that I never really was able to look behind the curtain and find the other part of their personality, like not being only the descendant of a perpetrator family, but also the other part of the personality that I think is crucial that you have to get to know if you want to see the whole person.
Yeah.
It's not that I blame them, because, you know, when you grow up with such a heritage, in my case, I didn't know, so I was able to develop a personality apart from being the granddaughter of Amon Göth. In their case, very often it is far more difficult. But somehow, I think this was one of the reasons why I never really felt that I had to meet them. But you have to note that it's also within the group of these perpetrator descendants, even though there are movies where they are featured all together, it's not that they see each other on a regular basis or that they have some support groups, you know, where they meet and talk to each other. No, it's a very private thing, actually, how they deal with their situation.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Fran in Dayton joins us now. Hi, Fran.
Hi.
Go right ahead, Fran.
Hello, Fran.
I wanted to ask Jennifer, what was it about her mother that a journalist was interviewing her in the first place?
Well, it was after the movie Schindler's List was out, and people were interested in the story, and people were interested in who my mother was. And he approached my mother, the journalist, and this is actually why the interview was then conducted.
Jennifer, you actually saw Schindler's List when it first came out, correct? And that was before you knew about your grandfather's past?
Yeah, and ironically, I watched the movie while I lived in Israel. I lived in Israel for a couple of years. When I was in the beginning of my 20s, I came to Israel. I did not come to Israel because I was a German. I was especially interested in Israel or the Jewish history. No, it was very simple at that time. I was living in Paris after I finished my high school degree, and I met a girl. It was a girl who was Israeli, and she was an exchange student in Paris. And she invited me to come to Israel to visit her. So I was in Israel for a holiday. And, go on in life. Somehow I met someone. It was an Israeli guy, and I fell in love to this guy. And this was what made me stay. So I lived in Israel for almost 5 years. I studied Middle Eastern history and politics while I was there. And it's part of me. It's part of who I am.
Now, have you seen the movie since you made the discovery?
I've watched it. I've watched some clips because often if I give interviews, they show some scenes of the movie. But it's not that I see the movie over and over and over. No. And, you have to distinguish it. In the end of the day, it is a very powerful Hollywood movie, but it is not a documentary. And I did not feel the need to watch it over and over again.
You didn't know your grandfather. If my understanding is correct, he was executed in 1946. Mm-hmm. You did know your grandmother, though, Ruth Irene Gert. Tell us about her.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the reasons, as I said, why I was affected so severely by the discovery of my family secret was the fact that I've lived and studied in Israel, and I had a very good insight into the Jewish soul. The second reason was that after being confronted with my biologic grandfather, who was such a monstrous figure, there was something else. In my childhood, I had a relationship with my biological grandmother. And when I found out that this person that I loved dearly as a child was also a woman who had a very different character and was able to live with a sadistic man, so sadistic, like Amon Gert, who was capable, of having trained dogs to tear human apart. When I discovered that my grandmother was this woman with two faces, it was very difficult for me somehow to bring the different emotions that I had together, because this was one of the single positive memories that I had of my early childhood, my biological grandmother. And suddenly to find out that she was also someone else was very, very difficult.
It's kind of unusual, too, because as I understand it, she had more of a liberal personality, didn't she?
Well, she was a woman who not only was capable of living with Amon Gert next to a concentration camp, closing her eyes for many, many years and actually supporting the Nazi ideology. She was also a woman who was very liberal after the war, because unlike my biological grandfather, who was executed and after the war, she was not convicted in the legal sense, my grandmother. After the war, she lived a life in Germany. She lived in Munich, and she was so tolerant that she had a lodger in her apartment who was a Nigerian, something that you probably would not expect. And to make the story even more complicated, we haven't talked about my biological father yet. My biological father was not this tenant who was living in my grandmother's apartment because she needed the money. It was not a relationship. It was just a lodger. But my father was, my biological father was a friend of this lodger of my grandmother. So you see, it's very, very complicated, and it actually shows that there are so many shades, also so many shades in the personality. When you look at Amon Gert, if you watch the movie Schindler's List, everything is black and white because this is Hollywood, this is how it works. But reality is very different. It is full of shades, and it is very complicated, and there are no easy answers.
This is Cincinnati Edition. Thanks to Sherry Coons for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. Jennifer Tiga, Sarah Weiss, and Betsy Singer left and join me this afternoon as we talk about Jennifer's book, My grandfather would have shot me. A black woman discovers her family's Nazi past. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jennifer, how did you begin coming to terms with all this?
Well, it was a long process. It took me years, and I did it with the help of professional help of a therapist in the very beginning. I had to work things through. I had when you have something that is so existential, if it's something that is it's so difficult to cope with, you neither can survive and make something good of it, out of it, we talked about the resilience. I was able somehow to turn it into something positive. For example, I've been to Israel last year because the book was released in Hebrew. And when I meet with survivors, I feel such a joy because when they see me, you can't see me, you can just listen to my voice, but I'm biracial, so the color of my skin is dark. When I'm with them, when they want to meet me, when they hug me, when they want to share their story with me, this fulfills me with so much joy. So in the long run, it was something that I think I integrated well in my life. People sometimes also assume that I wrote the book because this was part of the therapy. No, it wasn't. The therapy was something that was done behind the curtains, like behind closed doors. To share the story with the public was a very conscious decision because I understood that the story is much bigger than I am, and the themes that I'm tackling are the universal themes.
How difficult was it for you to share this story, Jennifer?
Once I made the decision, it wasn't difficult at all. I mean, in the beginning, I never thought I would be able to, because for a long period, just a very small group of people knew about it, my closest friends and my immediate family. But once I decided to share it, when I understood that it's important to share it, it was very easy, and I never doubted that it was the right decision.
How much of this have you have you told your own children?
Yeah, I did so. And I did not told them immediately, because when I discovered the book, I was diagnosed thereafter with a post-traumatic stress disorder, and I was severely depressed, and I was not able to get out of bed quite a while. But with the time when I felt better, I decided to share it with my children, because what made it so difficult was the fact itself, but also the fact that it was a toxic family secret. And I always knew that there needs to be transparency somehow to finish this vicious circle. So I told my children, but my children are not that old. So they do know the truth. They know about the heritage. In their case, it's not the grandfather, but it's a great-grandfather, which gives them more distance. But they don't have that. But they haven't seen, for example, the movie Schindler's List, and I don't share every cruel detail with them. When they're older, they will get to know. I will tell them more. But I want them to grow up normal, like normal children, with a normal childhood.
Mm. You say that they're young, and how they handled this?
Well, very normal, as long as you can say normal. They know, and they ask questions, but it's not something that we discuss every day at the dinner table. No, sometimes they come up with questions, but as it is with children, they come up with questions at a moment when you don't expect them to ask.
So ultimately, what is the message? You say the book really wasn't therapy, that you have a purpose for writing it. Ultimately, what is the message that you want people to get from this book?
Well, I always say there's no such thing as one message. What I want people to do is to contemplate, to find their own answers, to start to think, and whatever is their issue, they probably will find an answer. It is the quest for identity. Definitely. It is the toxic power of family secret. Of course, a history, if you look at it from the survivor side, from the victim side, this is something that I want them to understand, that there is no Nazi gene, that you decide who you want to be, that you can, you know, that it's your choice, you know, that who you want to be, your character, is not something that you inherit. Maybe you inherit some physical features. In my case, I was very frightened because I saw that when you look at me and at Amon, that we share some similarities in the face. There is a line, a specific line.
I've seen
line,
that side-by-side yeah. picture, Jennifer. Yes. Yes.
So, but this is, it says nothing about who you are. And this is what I want people to understand. But it's not just one message that I want to spread. I really want people to contemplate. This is the most important thing. And for the survivors, for the victims, when I talk about my story and I will share the story with them, I want them to find some peace, because they will see that the bloodline of the Gerd family did not repeat itself in a way that they might have expected.
There was a CNN article, Jennifer, that described your mother as feeling the need to atone for her father. Do you have that? Do you feel that way, that you have to atone?
No. Well, in the beginning, I was also irritated. For the second generation, I think it's very difficult sometimes to differentiate between responsibility and guilt. I felt guilty in the very beginning, but I understood that it's not my fault. I haven't been involved. I haven't been in the war. And it's true for me, but it is true for a whole generation. If you haven't been a part of it, you can't, or you shouldn't feel guilty, because you can't inherit guilt. It's as simple as that. You can inherit responsibility, but you can't inherit guilt. And for the second generation, my mother's the second generation, but there are other descendants of the perpetrator side who are thinking or feeling sometimes the same. This is a lifelong struggle, and they still carry the weight of the past on their shoulders. I do walk right upright. If you see me, hopefully at the event, you will see the difference.
And Sarah, I'd like your perspective on this, too. We asked Betsy earlier the lessons that you can take away from Jennifer's story.
Well, I think she, for me, just spoke to it, the responsibility that we're not responsible for what happened to our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, or our extended family, but we have a responsibility, whether it's to our own family or to history in general, of what are we going to do with this once we have the knowledge of what they experienced or what they did. How are we going to, what are we going to do with that? What is our responsibility? I was mentioning earlier, Jennifer, that, you know, you're the granddaughter of perpetrators and I'm the granddaughter of survivors. And I, too, feel very much a sense of responsibility to carry on a legacy in a way in which challenges people, others, to learn from this history. And so I think, although we come from very different perspectives, we share that similarity in what we hoped will come from this.
Well, Jennifer, Betsy, and Sarah, thank you for joining me this afternoon. Jennifer Tiga, her book is My Grandfather Would Have Shot Me, A Black Woman Discovers Her Family's Nazi Past. Also, the Center for Holocaust and Humanity Education Executive Director Sarah Weiss and Mayerson JCC of Cincinnati Cultural Arts Manager Betsy Singer-Lefton. Jennifer Tiga will be speaking at the Mayerson JCC on Thursday at 7 o'clock in the evening. There will be a meet and greet and book signing afterward, and there is a link to more information at WVXU.org.